I'm John Barrett Ingalls, and this is The How, The Why. Presented by 1888. Every week, we connect with artists, authors, and innovators in the world of publishing and literature to discuss their creative process and creative purpose, and explore the evolution of the industry. 1888 serves as a regional catalyst for the preservation, presentation, and promotion of cultural heritage and literary arts. Let's get connected.
Hello and welcome to The How, The Why, brought to you by 1888. My name is John Barrett Ingalls, and today we are connected with Joyce Krieg, author of the trilogy of Shauna J. Bogart mysteries, and also the president of the California Writers Club. Joyce, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
My pleasure. Now, I would love to talk to you, first and foremost, a little bit about your movement and journey into this thing of fiction writing. Is this something that you saw for yourself at a young age? How did you find your way into the writing world as far as writing fiction?
Yeah, well, I was always that kid with the nose in the book, and, you know, going through, you know, childhood and my teen years where it seemed like my best friends were all the fictional characters, that, you know, Joe March and Laura Ingalls and everybody else in that fictional world. But then as I got older, I, you know, also realized that making a living might be a good thing, to figure out a way to do that. So for a long time, I was a journalist and did business writing because that seemed to me a smart thing to do as far as, like I said, earning a living, making some money. I didn't really get drawn back to fiction again until, I sort of reached the old midlife crisis part of my life and just realized that, you know, I always wanted to write, you know, I love fiction, I love reading, and I was reading mysteries by the boatload, you know, and I'd get to the end of a book, and at the very last page, I'd flip it over, and so many times I'd be like, well, I could have done that better. And so I finally just decided, well, let's see if you can. And so that's basically what led me to try my hand at writing fiction. And since I loved mysteries, I decided to write a mystery. And the old write about what you know. I'd been working in radio for a long time, so I decided to write about a radio talk show host that ends up solving some crimes, and that was sort of how I got involved in writing fiction.
How long did that process of getting the first murder off mic written and into the right hands, was that something that, like, you just touched on a little bit here and there? Was it something that you said, oh, I'm going to write this and I'm going to dedicate religiously my time to getting this done?
Yeah, I wish I could say I was an overnight success story, but actually the process took 9 years. So I hope that's not going to be too discouraging to people. But on the other hand, I wasn't working on it full time for 9 years. It was one of these things where, you know, I'd work on it for a while and think it was good enough, start sending it out, getting all the rejections, and then getting discouraged and putting it away for, you know, months, years, and then pulling it out again, working on it again for a while. And in the meantime, you know, the need to earn a living and little things like that got in the way. And then how I finally got it published, I'd almost given up on it, to be honest, and was working on other stuff. And then I heard about this contest that St. Martin's Press does to find what they call the best first traditional mystery by an unpublished author. So I just thought, well, what the heck? Couldn't hurt. Might as well pull out that manuscript and enter it. And so I did, and damned if I didn't win. And that's how it all started.
Now, it's interesting, and I've experienced this as well. I've been working on a book for I say 10 years, maybe a little longer. And I think 10 years is going to be, no matter when it's done, I'm just going to keep it there. But there's something that interesting that has happened, especially in the last 20 years, is that the world changes so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something, as I was reading Murder Off, Mike, it was something, it was, you captured this time of, she still had an answering machine, but yet there are cell phones, so it's like this transitional time. And was that something that you had to go back and like, I need to tweak technology to kind of put it at a different time, or was that a challenge for you at all?
Well, the big challenge for me, I mean, yes and no, it was, but I guess the big challenge for me, and quite frankly, the reason I stopped writing the series, if you can call three books a series, but anyway, I stopped writing it, is because radio itself had changed so much and actually has now become so irrelevant, what with things like podcasting and satellite radio and everything else that people have that they can access. And commercial radio itself has just become so disappointing. The big corporations have totally taken it over and just eviscerated all of the creativity and the fun and the airwaves, at least the AM airwaves have, pretty much gotten hijacked by the right wing. And so it just wasn't interesting to me anymore or relevant, and it just wasn't something that spoke to me anymore as far as, gee, I want to write about a talk radio host who's going around solving crimes. So that was a big thing with it, and it was kind of, these books came out in the early 2000s. The first one was published in 2003, and it was almost the very last moment before social media exploded.
Right.
This was the time when I was still sending out paper press kits, that was the kind of publicity I was doing. And a couple years later, then Facebook came along, and of course, just everything changed when it comes to marketing books now. And it was also just right before that it became okay to self-publish. And, Kindle had not been invented yet. And there was still a lot of stigma about self-publishing back then. And so that's something certainly that's been a huge, 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 huge change. And in fact, my books right now, as far as a print copy or out of print, I don't know, where you found a copy of them, but, there's dealers selling them used.
Kindle.
Yeah, and then I was going to say it's still available as a Kindle download.
Right.
But, my publisher has brought them back as Kindle downloads. So, that's been a huge thing, part, kind of reviving authors' careers. And, now it is, relatively respectable now to self-publish on, online and the Kindle downloads. So that's, been a huge, huge, huge change that I've seen. And I think also I've seen with an awful lot of mystery writers now, are writing historicals because,
right.
That's what I'm working on right now. I love the Mad Men era, that whole vibe and that
sure.
whole thing. And so I'm working on now kind of a crime novel, thriller, whatever that's set in that era, because you don't have to deal with the constantly changing technology. I think that's why Sue Grafton continues to set the Kinsey Millhone books in the 1980s, because Kinsey doesn't have to deal with computers and cell phones and everything. I think she has a fax machine now, but that's about as close as it gets. So, and part of it, too, is with so much of crime solving these days is being done by technology, the whole DNA thing and most detectives now are just sitting in front of a computer all day.
Right, tracking cell phones, GPS.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not fun when it comes to writing a novel. It's not like going down to the abandoned warehouse down at the wharves to meet with your snitch to get your information when you're just typing something, in a Google search. So I think that's why, a lot of authors nowadays are choosing to write historicals instead of having them set in current times.
And when you first started writing about Shauna, when you created this character, who she created her own character as well, which is really cool. I love that. She is a pseudo version of herself throughout this series. When you first started working on Murder Off Mic, did you think, ooh, this is something I want to turn into a series? Or did you think about that after the first book came out?
Yeah, no, I definitely had a series in mind just from the get-go. And, you know, because that's what mystery readers like. They want to read about, I've taught some classes in mystery writing and everything, and I always really stress to people, you know, it's not the crime, it's not the puzzle, it's not the whodunit. What readers really fall in love with is the character and the setting, and they want to go back to the, you know, they want to be able to pick up your book, and, you know, it's like opening up a box of See's candy, you know, that they know what they're going to get, and, you know, it's like, you know, literary comfort food that, oh, it's going to be fun. I get to spend time with Kinsey Millhone, or I get to spend time with Travis McGee, or I get to go down to the Four Corners Indian Reservation territory that, you know, Tony Hillerman did so well, and spend time in with a character in a place that they enjoy. It's this little escape for them. So that's much, much more important than the intricacies of the puzzle of the crime and everything. So I can't remember even where we started now. But
no, knowing, just seeing that it was a series.
Oh, yeah, that I had a series in mind right from the get-go. And I will have to say, too, that for the people who are having success with self-publishing, it does seem to be the people that are writing either a series or a trilogy kind of thing. That, you know, they give away the first book or sell it for 99¢ with the idea that you're just going to get your readers hooked, and then they'll keep reading and keep reading. And it seems to work, you know, for the ones that are able to build an audience that way. So there's nothing wrong with doing a series.
I read a little bit on your website that there is, or a thought, or, you know, a scrap of hope that you may take the Shauna J series back in time to show a little bit of her back in the beginning stage of her radio career.
That's not something that's right on the top of my priority list now to work on, but it is something that when people do ask me about, gee, will you ever write a fourth book or anything, I think if I did, I would have to, you know, send her back in time, back again when radio was fun. Perhaps have her being, you know, a young person working, you know, back in the days of the underground FM stations in the 70s. And but somehow just to get her back in time when, you know, it was a fun time to work in radio, and back when all the stations were owned by small companies, or they were little mom and pop businesses, and there was just a whole variety of stuff going out over on the airwaves. It wasn't unusual to have, you know, if it was a talk station, to have hosts of all different political viewpoints, not just all, you know, to the far right wing. So,
right.
If I brought her back, I mean, the only way I could see doing it is if I somehow said that, okay, this is another Shauna J adventure, but it's taking place in, you know, 1977 or something, so when she was, you know, 22 years old or whatever. So, yeah, you know, that may happen. Never say never, but
sure.
It could happen.
What was the process like of after the first one and after getting success and getting published? What was the process like? How much easier was it to write the second two?
The second one was fairly simple. I actually, this was a wonderful piece of advice that I got from someone, I can't remember who, but some, you know, pretty well-known published author, that have your second book written before the first one comes out, because otherwise you know, you're going to be so busy doing promotion for the first book, and then you don't want to have that pressure from your publisher to, you know, to get that second book out. Because definitely with mystery, they want a book a year. That's just, you know, or any series, I think, whether, you know, sci-fi or romance or whatever, they want a book a year. So I had the second book pretty much done before the first one came out. The third one was difficult, only not because of the writing itself. It was just a lot of personal stuff that was going on.
Right.
And partly just why, you know, a fourth and whatever down the line never happened. So, you know, but it had nothing to do with writing and the writing process.
How did your work in journalism influence the way that you write fiction, or does it?
That's an interesting thing, because when I started working, you know, on the book that became Murder Off Mic and started writing fiction, I thought it would be a piece of cake, because I figured, you know, I am a good writer when it came to journalism and business writing, and I felt like, so what's going to be so hard about writing fiction? And I will have to say that, if nothing else, working on a daily newspaper or at a radio station, especially a station doing news and writing news copy, it certainly forces you to meet deadlines, and it forces you to produce. You know, there's none of this sitting in front of the typewriter saying, I'm blocked, I can't think of anything. That doesn't go very far when you're sitting in the middle of a newsroom. So it was certainly good discipline to, you know, learn how to produce on demand, as it were. But I also really had to almost relearn how to write when it came to fiction, because fiction is just a very different animal from a newspaper article or, you know, a script for a, you know, a radio newscast. You know, in newspaper, it's the, you know, the idea of the inverted pyramid, where the most important thing comes first, and then the next most important thing, and the next most important thing. And of course, in fiction, that may or may not be how the best way to tell a story. The best way to tell a story may be to start with something very insignificant and then build. So I had to unlearn a lot of habits that worked well for me in writing journalism, and pick up new habits that worked well for writing fiction.
Now we're going to jump a little bit over to the other part of your life. You are the president of the California Writers Club. Tell our listeners a little bit about that club and how long you've been working with them.
Yeah, I've been involved in California Writers Club for about 10 years now, I guess. And what it is, it's, you know, as the name would imply, it's an organization for writers who, you know, you actually don't have to live in the state of California to be a member. We do have members all over the place. But usually it's because they lived here originally and then moved away. But we have 21, we call them branches, not chapters, that are located all over the state, as far north as Mendocino and as far south as Orange County. And we have around 2,000 members, last time I checked. And mostly what they, I mean, we do a lot of stuff, but mostly what's the real core of the club, as it were, is that each of the branches usually has a monthly meeting. And they bring in a guest speaker that talks about something, you know, something having to do with the craft of writing or getting your work published. So it's certainly, you know, for me it was part of the thing was, you know, writing is just such a lonely business, and you're, you know, you're sitting by yourself in front of a computer all day.
Right.
So it was a way just to sort of get out and mingle with other people who are doing the same thing that I'm doing and have the same dream, and just, you know, get yourself out of the house and and meet some people. And also what actually drew me into this club more than anything, I'm also kind of a history nut, and I love the idea that the whole heritage of the club, it's been around since 1909.
Wow.
And supposedly was founded by Jack London, although we've never actually been able to prove that for sure. But certainly our whole legend and lore is that Jack London was somehow involved in the founding of California Writers Club. And there is a lot of, you know, you could sort of draw, you know, connect the dots here that, you know, club was founded in 1909 in the East Bay, you know, in the Oakland area. And Jack London was very active and involved in Oakland and the East Bay in the early 1900s. He certainly hung out with the same crowd that we know was part of the founders of California Writers Club, the whole, you know, kind of the Oakland, Berkeley, Bohemian, you know, bunch that was up there, Joaquin Miller and Ina Kulbrith and Herman Whittaker, Austin Lewis. And so, you know, like I say, if you connect the dots, you could probably make an argument that Jack London was indeed the founder of the club. But I will also have to say we have no concrete proof of that. But be that as it may, the whole history on legend and lore, I've always thought Jack London is just such a fascinating character.
Oh, yeah.
And so that really drew me in, just the idea of being part of this century-long heritage of people writing in California. And then you know how it is. Some of us are, you know, I have this fatal flaw that whenever they ask for volunteers for anything, my right hand just automatically shoots up. And the next thing you know, good old Joyce is volunteering to help with one thing and another and another and another. And that all led to, in July, me becoming president.
Which was your initial branch that you started out with?
My home branch is Central Coast, which is on the Monterey Peninsula.
I am born and raised in Napa, so I love that there's a Napa Valley Writers branch as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I also have, you know, grew up with that Jack London lore and studying everything about him. So it's very cool. I'm curious, though, because now I live in Los Angeles, why there's not a Los Angeles branch?
Yeah, you know, the closest one to Los Angeles, there is one that's, you know, they call it San Fernando Valley, and they meet in Woodland Hills, and at that motion picture retirement home thing that's up in Woodland Hills.
Okay.
And there's one in Long Beach, and I think what the issue... I'm not that familiar, not, you know, since I'm up north, but I think part of the issue, you know, we don't have a branch in San Francisco either. We have one on the peninsula. We have one in Berkeley, you know, Fremont, everything. I think what happens in the really big urban cores like San Francisco and L.A., there's so much else that's available for creative people that there isn't quite the need and the urgency that there is in some, you know, like here where I live, we're it, you know. There is no other organization for writers that's in our area, whereas in a San Francisco or Los Angeles, there's so much else going on. So I think that's part of it. I know we have tried, we used to always have a booth at that, you know, the LA Times Festival of Books. We used to have a booth there, and we'd collect names and, you know, it seemed like all of a sudden there was some momentum building, and then it would always fall apart. So, I'm not quite sure what's, you know, in San Diego. We don't have anything in San Diego either. So.
Right. You said as south as Orange County.
Yeah.
Now, what does a writer need to be a member? Like, what is it that you look for in your members?
Yeah, you know, pretty much we're open to, you know, pretty much anyone who is interested in joining, although there is kind of a, there's sort of two different classes of members. We have what we call active, which are people who have actually been published in one way or another within the last 10 years, and then what we call associate, which are people that are, you know, working toward publication. But they're really, as far as privileges or, you know, rank or anything like that, it really doesn't matter. We're just looking for people that either, you know, have some sort of background in writing. I mean, to be honest, most of our members are retired. It's a challenge with, you know, I think all clubs and organizations these days to get younger people who, you know, interested in joining. So an awful lot of our members are people who are retired from jobs that had a heavy involvement in writing. You know, they were journalists, they were academics of some sort. But there's also an awful lot of, you know, the baby boomer generation is just retiring in huge numbers right now. And, you know, we tend to be educated and, you know, had decent jobs up until the time we retired. And so all of a sudden, I mean, I'm certainly seeing it where I live that, you know, you have this educated and, you know, fairly well-off class of people with time on our hands. And you know, what goes through your mind is like, oh, I always wanted to write a book, you know. and so they go out and join groups like California Writers Club. So we do have an awful lot of, you know, people in that, you know, category, as it were, that join our club. So
do you look for writers whose topics or stories or poems relate to California, or is it more of just that's where they live?
Yeah, we have people doing every kind of writing. It doesn't have to relate to California in any particular way. Gosh, you know, we have people doing, you know, poetry, and you know, there's a big interest in memoir right now. Again, I think it's this retired thing, and so, you know, they're writing their life story, and you know, just, boy, there's just a huge variety of stuff. We have people who are travel writers and, you know, magazine articles and academic writing, and we have, gosh, at my branch, we have one of our members who is writing a blog about beer, so it just runs the gamut.
You also have started doing literary reviews as well. Talk a little bit about, for any of our new authors or upcoming authors that are listening, what you look for when you do literary reviews.
We have an annual literary review that comes out that is, you know, writing by our members that they submit, and then the best stuff gets chosen to go into the literary review. And, you know, it's funny that you asked that question, because I was just spent the morning chatting back and forth with one of the editors from the most recent issue about, you know, guidelines for choosing what goes in and, you know, what's rejected. And I've been a judge in quite a few writing contests and everything, and in the end, it's just so subjective. You know, it's just like, you just know whether a piece of writing works or not, you know, and whether a story works or not. And I don't, you know, poetry isn't my thing. I always defer to other people that judge on poetry. But with short stories, you know, when you're a judge on things like this, there's usually, they give you a list of criteria, and you're supposed to, you know, weigh it so much on, you know, the mechanics, spelling and grammar, and how much on storytelling skills, and how much on emotional impact. And I always just think, like, oh, come on, you know, in the end it either works or it doesn't, and it speaks to me or it doesn't, and I love it or I don't. And so it is just so subjective, you know, the old, in the eye of the beholder. And but that's why I think it's important in things like that to have more than one person do the screening or do the judging.
Sure.
Because something that may speak, you know, I'm pretty plot driven, and my interests are somewhat lowbrow. I'm not a big thing on reading literary type fiction, so I'm much more of, give me a good mystery, give me a good thriller, you know, when is Michael Connelly going to come out with something new, and much more than the real heavy literary stuff. So,
but you look for the review, it's reserved for members only, is that
yeah,
right?
Yes,
okay.
It is a members only thing. That's one of the perks of membership, is getting
sure.
to submit for our literary review.
do you have, aside from the different branches and their meetings, do you have statewide meetings or events that bring everybody together?
We have regional events. Several of our branches put on their own writers' conference. I know the one in Santa Rosa has one, and there's one in what they call the Tri-Valley area, Livermore, Pleasanton, over there in the East Bay, that they put on a conference. And also one of our branches down in Southern California in Apple Valley, of all places, they're very, very active, strong and active branch, and they have a conference they do every year. And it's usually a 1 or 2 day event where they bring in experts and panelists and that kind of thing. We used to do a statewide conference, and I think several things have happened that, the recession hit and people just didn't have the money to go to things like this anymore. And I've seen it not only in our club, but just with writers' conferences in general, that so many of them, I think, have gone by the wayside because people just can't afford to do that kind of traveling, or, you know, at least the recession just kind of knocked the pins out from under so many of them when nobody could travel anymore. And also, I think nowadays there's just so much stuff available online, so many webinars and other, you know, sources of conference-type events that people can do and not have to go on site, which I think is kind of too bad, because so much of it is the interaction with other people and
right.
Getting together with other people. It's a very important thing. So, at some point, we may bring back our statewide conference. And also, there are a ton of work to put on, and we're an all-volunteer
right.
organization to really put on a decent conference, you've got to have some paid staff, I think, assuming it's more than just a one-day thing or even a weekend thing, but if you're looking at something that's lasting 3 or 4 days, I know up here in Northern California, there's this thing called the San Francisco Writers Conference that happens every year, and I think it's almost become sort of, that 500-pound gorilla in the room, that to try to compete against them, it's just going to be, an exercise in futility. In fact, California Writers Club, we always, take out a sponsorship in the San Francisco Writers Conference and have a table there and pass out brochures and everything, because I think we've accepted the reality of let them put on the big conference and we'll just sort of participate as a sponsor.
Yeah, they'll be the host, and then you go and take your little corner.
Yeah.
Well, Joyce, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. I highly encourage everybody, especially all of our California listeners, to go and check out the California Writers Club. And it doesn't cost a lot to be a member. It's seems like a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's look at our website, which is calwriters.org, and it'll have all the information on there of how to become a member, how to find a branch that, your nearby branch. And the new member dues are only $65, and it's a wonderful way just to meet other people who have your dream and that are doing the same thing you're doing.
Thank you again, Joyce, for your time.
Okay, thank you.
This has been The How, The Why with John Barrett Ingalls. The show is produced by Kevin Stanek and yours truly, with production assistance by Sarah Becker. The How the Why theme music was composed and performed by Dan Record. Please consider supporting 1888 and our mission. Become an 1888 advocate by purchasing our books, participating in our programs, and pledging today. For more information, visit 1888.center. That's 1-888-DOT-CENTER. I want to remind you all to keep making art. Thank you.